Welcome to the Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast brought to you by FTR, where we share timely transportation intelligence with you on a weekly basis. The Trucking Market Update is hosted by FTR's Vice President of Trucking, Avery Weiss. As Avery presents the information in the podcast, you can follow along and review the graphs and indicators by downloading the PDF or PowerPoint of the presentation from our podcast landing page. A link to the PDF and PowerPoint is available now at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. From there, you can also find past episodes and downloads for the Trucking Market Update, as well as the weekly Rail Market Update with Todd Tronowski and much more. That link again is www.ftrintel.com/podcast.
Welcome to FTR's weekly Trucking Market Update. I'm Avery Weiss, Vice President of Trucking. This is episode 174 for the week of August 8th, 2022. Before we start, a reminder that you can download a PDF with graphics related to this discussion at www.ftrintel.com/podcast. Before we get into the data this week, I wanted to point out something potentially significant related to cost relief for some truck purchasers. As you probably know by now, the U.S. Senate over the weekend passed the Inflation Reduction Act, or H.R. 5376, which includes numerous provisions related to clean energy. The bill appears to be headed to becoming law because Senate passage was the biggest hurdle. Now, one of the measures in H.R. 5376 is what's called the, quote, Qualified Commercial Clean Vehicle Credit, end quote, which would provide a tax credit of up to $40,000 for qualified heavy commercial electric vehicles, or up to $7,500 for qualified commercial electric vehicles weighing less than 14,000 pounds. A separate provision would provide a tax credit of up to $100,000 for installation of charging stations needed to support those vehicles. Now, there are all sorts of qualifiers on these provisions, so I'm not going to spend any time going into detail, but if you find the legislation, you can find it at congress.gov, and you can look for the key provisions in the most recent version of the bill, and those are sections 13403 and section 13404. Okay, let's start our look at the data this week with a look at changes in the carrier base during July. The strains on margins due to high diesel prices and weaker spot rates apparently continues to take its toll on very small carriers. Net revocations of for-hire trucking authority in July totaled nearly 6,200, and that's only slightly lower than the more than 6,300 net revocations in June, according to FTR's analysis of data from the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration, or FMCSA. Plunging diesel prices and more stable spot rates in the van segments might start to prop up weaker carriers, but it could take some time for the data to reflect that trend, if indeed it is even occurring. Owing to the process and lead times for revoking authority, net revocations probably are reflecting carriers that failed 2 or 3 months earlier. Meanwhile, the number of new trucking companies entering the market has been surprisingly resilient given the pressures that have led to more failures. FMCSA in July authorized just under 7,200 new for-hire trucking operations, down about 800 from the June level. Now, this is down close to 4,000 from the record level in March, but it is still more than 4,000 above the pre-pandemic average, which goes back to 2015. The higher-than-expected figures for new carriers might simply reflect momentum from the record high set in March, but could also point to structural changes in the market. Digital freight platforms increasingly have made management of large numbers of very small operations more efficient. Also, legal threats to the leased owner-operator model, such as that in California, likely will maintain a floor on new carriers as truckload carriers increasingly adopt a brokerage model, among others, for managing surge capacity. While we're talking about FMCSA data, I want to mention the latest report on the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. Through June, more than 135,000 drivers had been flagged with a violation since the clearinghouse began operating in January 2020. Of those, more than 100,000, or about 74%, are still barred from driving. In May, we had seen the highest number of violations since the clearinghouse began. June didn't quite match those numbers, but they were quite close and represented the second highest number of violations for any month. As we talked about last month, though, the higher levels of violations presumably reflect higher numbers of employed drivers and more queries of the database, not more drug use. And speaking of queries, the number of pre-employment queries of the clearinghouse was the highest ever in June, edging out the prior high in March. Okay, let's move on and talk about diesel prices. The national average diesel price fell 14.5 cents during the week ended August 8th to $4.993 a gallon. Diesel prices had not been below $5 a gallon on average since the first week of March. Over the past 7 weeks, diesel prices have plunged more than 82 cents. But we should point out that the average price is still about $1.63 higher than it was a year earlier. Meanwhile, crude prices have fallen significantly. On August 4th, West Texas Intermediate closed at $88.54 a barrel, and that is the lowest price since Groundhog Day. In the latest trading, crude prices firmed slightly, but were still under $91 a barrel. Okay, let's talk about the spot market for truck freight during the week ended August 5th. That's week 31 of the year. Flatbed spot rates in the truckstop.com system continued to fall sharply during the week as the segment recorded its first negative year-over-year comparison in rates since July of 2020. Rates in other key segments were more resilient. Dry van rates dipped only slightly, and refrigerated rates saw their largest increase, although it wasn't a particularly large one, since late June. Load postings were down in all segments, led by flatbed, which saw volume fall below the five-year average for the first time since June of 2020. Okay, let's look more closely at the numbers. We'll start with rates. The total broker posted rate in the system fell about 8 cents. Rates were 7.5% below the same 2021 week, but nearly 17% above the five-year average for the week. However, FTR estimates that if we exclude an imputed fuel surcharge, rates would be down about 20% year-over-year. Let's look at rates by segment. Dry van spot rates dipped by a cent. Rates were 16% lower than the same week last year, but nearly 7% higher than the five-year average for the week. However, dry van rates were more than 31% lower than the same 2021 week if we exclude an imputed fuel surcharge. Refrigerated spot rates increased more than 5 cents, which is the largest gain since one of the same magnitude in week 26. Rates were about 17% below the same 2021 week, but about 8% above the five-year average. However, excluding fuel surcharges, rates were nearly 30% below the same week last year. And flatbed spot rates fell nearly 12 cents after a drop of essentially the same amount during the previous week. The broker-posted rate has now plunged more than 49 cents, or more than 14%, over the past 5 weeks. Flatbed rates were 2% below the same week last year, although they are still about 24% above the five-year average for the week. However, excluding an imputed fuel surcharge, flatbed rates were nearly 14% below the same week last year. And let's look at volume. Total load postings decreased 9%, Volume was about 39% below the same 2021 week, but still nearly 10% above the five-year average. Volume was down in all regions except for the Mountain Central, which is the smallest of all regions in volume. Let's look at volume by segment. Dry van load postings were down 5.4%. Volume was about 36% below the level posted in the same week last year, but about 14% above the five-year average. Refrigerated load postings declined nearly 4%. Volume was about 43% below the same week last year, but nearly 14% above the five-year average. And flatbed load postings fell 13.5%. Volume was about 45% below the same 2021 week. And as I noted earlier, they were actually below the five-year average to the tune of 1.5%. Okay, let's wrap up the weekly data with a quick look at mortgage rates, which fell sharply for the second straight week, as inflationary pressures and Fed rate hikes lost out to weaker demand for financing in the struggle over whether interest rates would go up or down. The average rate on a 30-year fixed-rate mortgage fell nearly a quarter point in the latest week to 4.99%, according to Freddie Mac. Rates are down more than half a point over the past 2 weeks and are below 5% for the first time since early April. By the way, here's a curious coincidence. Mortgage rates in the latest week are 4.99%, as I just said. Diesel prices are $4.99 a gallon. And back in June, during the week in which diesel prices hit a record high of $5.81 a gallon, mortgage rates were 5.81%. That's pretty weird, huh? So most of the rest of the podcast is about the labor market. But let's get out of the way one important indicator that isn't. A key indicator of manufacturing strength largely held up in July, but a more granular look is not so reassuring for freight transportation. The Institute for Supply Management's manufacturing index eased just 0.2 points to a reading of 52.8, which indicates continued expansion of the sector and suggests more stability than the decline of more than 3 points that we saw in June. However, the components of the index most closely associated with freight, new orders and production, were weaker. And in fact, the new orders component declined for the second straight month of contraction, and production slowed as well, although it was still above 50. Okay. Let's get into the labor market, and we'll start with a look at the demand for workers. The number of unfilled job positions at the end of June fell 5.4%, seasonally adjusted, from a month earlier, and that's the largest decrease in a single month since the April 2020 contraction. Now, the 10.7 million job openings is still nearly 53% above the February 2020 level, but it does appear that the stress in the labor market as measured by job openings has peaked. Job quits also declined, although only by 2%. However, quits have declined for 4 straight months and are just 5.8% above the February 2020 level, as opposed to more than 18% above that level back in February of this year. And that brings us to the employment situation report for July. The U.S. economy in July added a surprisingly robust 528,000 payroll jobs, according to the initial Bureau of Labor Statistics estimates. The increase was the strongest since February. During the 4 months in between February and July, payroll job growth had been solid, but quite steady, at between 368,000 and 398,000 monthly. Now, July was notable because it is the first month that payroll employment exceeded, just barely, pre-pandemic levels. Employment was 32,000 jobs, or 0.02% above February 2020, seasonally adjusted. Now, it's important to note that July payroll employment merely returns jobs to the pre-pandemic level. Employment has not caught up to where job levels presumably would have been had there been no pandemic and the trend in job growth had just simply continued beyond February 2020. Of course, there is a presumption in that. The economy was slowing prior to the pandemic, so if we had had a downturn, that growth trend might not have continued anyway, and perhaps we would be no better off today than we are now. In other news from the employment situation report, the unemployment rate dipped a tenth of a point to 3.5%, and that too is notable in that it matches for the first time during the pandemic the unemployment rate immediately prior to the pandemic. Also notable in a less positive sense, at least in my opinion, was a tenth of a point decline in the labor participation rate, which is now 62.1%. Labor participation is the lowest since the 61.9% in December of last year. And I find the decline in labor participation perplexing. When we look at inflation and stock market volatility and all these other pressures on the consumer, I would have expected more people re-entering the labor force, especially older Americans who presumably feel less secure about having enough money saved up for retirement. Go figure. Okay, let's look at how major sectors of the economy fared. Payroll job gains in July were led by education and health services, at an increase of 122,000 jobs, followed by leisure and hospitality at 96,000, and professional and business services at 89,000. Looking at it on a percentage basis, though, the major sector with the strongest growth was mining and logging, and that rose on the strength of jobs related to oil and gas extraction and other oil field activities. It'll be interesting to see, as I talked earlier, now that we have crude prices that have come down significantly, although they're still high historically, whether that job growth will continue in oil and gas extraction, or whether there might be some pullback now that prices have moderated. Gains in transportation and warehousing were smaller than typically have been the case. Both parcel and local delivery, what is formally called couriers and messengers, and warehousing and storage saw small declines. And warehousing and storage saw a large downward revision for recent months. Now, that sector still leads the U.S. economy in pandemic-era job growth at 35.1% above February of 2020. Parcel and local delivery is second at 25.7% above February 2020. But employment in both of those sectors has basically flattened out, would appear, given all the stresses on consumption and all the pressure, downward pressure on inventories, perhaps, it would seem that those sectors have peaked in their employment. The only question now is, do they just stabilize or do they come down? Let's wrap up this week with a look at trucking employment. For-hire trucking saw a modest gain of 3,500 jobs, although June estimates were revised upward. Payroll employment in trucking once again was a record, and 79,600 jobs, or 5.3% above February 2020 levels. It's interesting to note that there are now more jobs above the pre-pandemic level than were lost from that level during the economic shutdown in April of 2020. Now, we have to caution that while the number of truck drivers probably is, almost certainly is, an all-time high, it isn't as high, probably, as implied by the payroll employment figures. As noted earlier in the podcast, we're seeing more independent carriers giving up their authority, and it's reasonable to assume that many of them have taken jobs with larger carriers. Many, if not most, of those very small carriers are not captured in the BLS payroll data, so the hiring of their drivers by larger carriers would tend to distort the picture of net changes in the driver force. The idea that failing carriers have fed payroll employment growth in trucking is further supported by the timing of payroll job growth. As we have noted previously, April and May were the largest months for trucking together basically 27 years. And May especially was strong, as we saw the most jobs added since April of 2013. And if we look a little closer at the individual segments, and that data is available only through June, we see that general freight truckload employment in May spiked by 14,900 jobs. That's the largest one-month gain for general freight truckload since October of 1995. Now, it doesn't take too much imagination to see that many very small trucking operations that were already stressed by steadily rising diesel prices decided to call it quits after the historic surge in diesel prices in March, as well as the continued softening of rates in the spot market, and that the drivers for those carriers have now migrated to larger carriers. Okay, let's wrap up by recapping the key takeaways for the week. The Inflation Reduction Act includes a tax credit of up to $40,000 for electric trucks. Revocations of trucking company authority stayed quite high in July. New carriers authorized fell, but stayed much higher than the pre-pandemic norm. More than 100,000 drivers with drug and alcohol violations are still barred from driving. The number of clearinghouse pre-employment queries was the highest ever in June. Diesel prices have fallen nearly 82 cents in the past 7 weeks. Crude is trading at around $90 a barrel. Flatbed spot rates and volume continued to fall sharply in the latest week. Mortgage rates fell to just under 5%. The ISM manufacturing index declined slightly. Job openings in June fell by the most since April 2020. The U.S. economy added 528,000 payroll jobs. Unemployment dipped to the pre-pandemic rate of 3.5%. Labor participation in July was the lowest since December. Jobs in local delivery and in warehousing are leveling off. And trucking saw a modest gain in jobs to another record level. Next week, it will be all about inflation as we look at the Consumer Price Index and the Producer Price Index, along with our usual discussion of diesel prices and the spot market for truck freight. We'll give you a bit of a break before we have another big week for economic indicators in the week after that. That's it for FDR's Trucking Market Update, episode 174 for the week of August 8th, 2022. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, and we hope you will join us next week.
That's it for this week's Trucking Market Update on the State of Freight podcast. You can find more publicly available State of Freight content and download the PDF and PowerPoint of today's presentation by going to www.ftrintel.com/podcast. FTR is the leader in freight transportation forecasting in North America, providing consistently reliable reports for trucking, rail, and intermodal transportation, as well as providing demand analysis for commercial vehicle and railcar. For more information about the work of FTR, visit www.ftrintel.com or call us at 888-988-1699 to find out which publications will best support your business.